5 minute.
Could I have 10 and 5?
10 and 5. Okay, thank you. Diane got that. Okay.
Go
It's
ahead.
all yours.
Okay.
All yours.
Hi, I'm Claudine B. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And I'm going to read because I can't hold a thought. So I'm gonna, just do what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. As I've thought about it, sometimes I land on being born a compulsive overeater, and sometimes I land on becoming one due to my environment. And I've decided it doesn't matter. I mean, I just am that. So it really doesn't matter. Did my environment, help push that along? It did. From my earliest memory, I have coped with food. Like many in OA, I grew up in an abusive house that got progressively worse as I got older. The most damaging of all was the spiritual abuse that was used to justify forgiving the other abuses. Addiction is in every area of my immediate and extended family, and that includes me. I am spiritually sick and an addict in need of recovery. Food saved my life when I was younger. I spent so many years not understanding why people would say their addiction of choice saved their lives. It just didn't make sense to me because what I knew is that it was destroying my life. But now that I'm in recovery, I realized, looking back, that it did. I needed that coping mechanism to survive what was happening. And I could look at it now as something that God gave me. At the time, it served me well. And then when it didn't, it didn't. I had made it my God. Let's see. I would eat myself into a state of exhaustion in front of the television and be completely numb. I can remember being, 6 and 7 years old and sitting this far from the TV on my knees with a family-sized box of cereal and just eat the whole thing. And of course, that was sedation for me. I mean, I could have taken a sleeping pill and it would have been the same thing. This progressed through middle and high school. Restricting and binging became the norm, and I was always under or overweight. I tried all the typical weight loss programs. I did Weight Watchers with my mom, and we did Jane Fonda workout classes religiously. We would go to these big things. Part of the best part was buying the clothes, the leotard, all that stuff. Diets worked until they didn't, and then I would move on to the next popular diet with my mom. I had my daughter when I was 30 and modeled all my unhealthy behaviors as she grew up. I was reactive and emotionally immature. Now, I don't mean to, say that I'm not emotionally immature anymore. I have to get help with that. But I know it's there and I continue to work on it. She was present to see all my worry and lack of trust in God. She saw me binge reading dieting books, join dieting clubs, but buy healthy food and let it rot, throw away binge foods, promising it was the last time, eat out of the trash, eat her food, buy clothes that were too small and hang them around my room as shame motivation to lose weight, allow the number on the scale to determine my worth every day, and multiple other things. She watched it all. All the behaviors I grew up with and swore I would never model for my own child. And, my mom did that too. And it was this belief that if you get away from the toxicity, then you won't be toxic. And I didn't have anything else to give her. I was drinking more and more in addition to eating and would, quote unquote, fall asleep between 6 and 7 every night, leaving her to spend the evening alone doing homework. And then I would say, I'm just so tired. I couldn't deal with a single feeling I had. I was angry all the time and just a perpetual, unique victim. Nobody had experienced pain like I did. Nobody had a past like I did. I was just long-suffering and very much poor me. And that came out of me in my emotions and anger and all of that. So I didn't walk up to my daughter and go, hey, I suffered the most in this world. But she knew that's what I thought. So I went to OA, I mean to AA. but I didn't take it seriously. It was really easy for me to put down alcohol. Like after 30 days, I was like, you know, this is a pain because I can't do what other people do, but it's just not that big a deal. So once I put down the alcohol, the food just skyrocketed. I mean, that was my drug. That was what got me up. That was what brought me down. It was everything. And so my therapist suggested that alcohol was not my primary addiction. She said that food was, and that it was just as sedating and made me just as drunk as alcohol did. She said, you know, if you are high on mass amounts of food and you need to react quickly to your daughter in emergency and get her somewhere, it's lowered by half. And I didn't believe that about food. I just thought that is absurd. And I thought she was using it as a motivator to get me to stop eating so much, but she didn't. That wasn't what she was doing. She suggested OA. So I went to an OA meeting and I got a sponsor, and I wanted the sponsor that everybody wanted. And so I worked hard to get it. I refused to use the tools. I wasn't honest with her ever. I didn't believe it was disease, and I certainly didn't believe it wanted me dead. I thought that was really extreme, and they could dial down the drama because it was just silly to say that, you know, and I could handle everything else. I believed it was a lack of willpower, and I wanted to be thin. Thin would make me happy. Thin would make life more comfortable. Thin would get me a man. Thin would get me a job. That was the God I needed to help me get through life. I left after a year. I got to step five with a sponsor and thought, you can't handle my stuff. You just can't. I don't think you have the experience. I don't think you have this, that. She did. She has great recovery. I see her now, all that stuff. So things obviously got worse and worse. I went back to OA. I got another sponsor and repeated the same process of lying and unwillingness to surrender. She didn't make me report my food. I found the perfect person because she trusted me. She trusted what I was saying, and I lied to her literally daily. She would call me and check in, or I would call her and check in and say, yeah, this have how was your day? Did you have any resentments? Well, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And she'd say, you need to do a 10 step. And I'd go, I do. I'm going to do that. I didn't even know what a 10 step was. I had no idea. I would just tell her I was going to do it. I stayed in the rooms and I started parroting the recovery I heard, not putting two and two together that I was steadily gaining weight, but talking about how strong my recovery was. It didn't occur to me. 10 years after that, I invented the truth that everyone in OA was lying, especially about being struck abstinent. I was insulted that anyone believed that I didn't know that they had just found their willpower again. I was bitter and filled with contempt for OA and everyone in my home meeting because God wasn't giving me what they were talking about. So on some level, I knew it was the truth. I knew they had a connection with God that I did not have, and I knew that there was some reason they had joy in the recovery, but I needed to call them liars to justify wanting to leave. So thankfully, God can still show his power in rebellion and unwillingness. Regardless of my protests, I knew OA and God were all I had, and my prayer continued to be that he would change me, even if he was angry with me, because I always thought he was angry with me. I thought I was just one of those people that he couldn't love because I was so bad. Right before COVID quarantine happened, God put someone in my life that he would use in my rescue. We had never met, even though she had been in my program for as long as I had, and even in my home group. We ended up talking after a meeting, and I knew I wanted her to be my friend. She was broken and authentic and in the same seemingly hopeless place that I was in. We decided to talk on the phone once a week to go through, can't remember what OA book, but it was, or A book, but it was a book. And we dropped that after the second time. And just talked. So We bonded over healthy and unhealthy things. We came to find out that much of our trauma was alike. We followed the same God. We're both single moms with kids. Most importantly, we shared the same addiction. God was building a relationship and preparing us both for a radical change. I got honest and told her I was leaving OA because it just didn't work. Doesn't work. It's not a good program. Time passed, and she told me about a podcast.
That's 10 minutes, Claudine.
Thank you. That someone told her about in a meeting. She had gone to an in-person meeting, and she met this person who was just on fire. It just had the passion that we all want for this program. This person told her about a podcast of a 12-step workshop called Recovery Jam. And everyone, I don't, suggest it or anything. It's good. Everybody comes to OA in a different way. It doesn't matter how, it just matters that you do. So she said, "Would you give it a try? No, you don't want to come back. I know how you feel about it. Give it a try." So I did. I listened to one of the podcasts and I felt hope. Then I listened to another one. And then I went to one of their big book Zoom meetings where, it's not a share meeting. They just teach big book through the whole thing. And she was right. I had never heard teaching like it before. And I thought, could it be that God was going to save me? I knew he could, but would he? Was I worth saving? Was I worth giving this gift, or was it too late? Was I unredeemable? And so it felt urgent. It felt like an emergency. It felt like, people that are running through the airport to catch a plane where they're about to close the door to the gate. And so I called, no, I started messaging someone that was leading Recovery Jam, and it got to the stalker point. I was like, I want you to give me a sponsor. I want you to tell me who to go to. I don't want to throw a dart at the wall. And she responded, and she said, she asked me where I lived, and I told her, and she said, I have a sponsee who just recovered. And I'm going to put you in touch with her. Well, I didn't know she was texting her while we were texting. And she said, call this person right now. She's waiting for you to call. And I thought that's a little quicker than I wanted because I was going to binge again tonight, but it happened. She caught me. I met with her the same day. It was 4 p.m. in Whole Foods. It was busy there. She asked me if I was desperate and willing to surrender. And for the first time in my life, I truly was. My weight was higher than it had ever been, but that reason for surrender was it was finally secondary. My emotional drunkenness was ruling and ruining my life. Every day I would binge and pack food on top of my hate, self-pity, rage, and resentment. I was dishonest and I was really vengeful. And I would, anybody that made me mad, they immediately got silent scorn. And if they asked me what was wrong, I'd say nothing. So it was silent scorn and gaslighting, which, of course, I hate it when that's done to me. I was destroying everything in my path, and I lived in isolation and loneliness. It was complete chaos because I would be at home binging and think, as soon as I get this weight off, I'll go here, I'll go there, I'll do this, I'll do that, and it was never going to happen. She had me pray out loud for a spiritual awakening, and there were people in the next booth, but I did it. I was absolutely desperate. She gave me a food plan, my first assignment, and her non-negotiables to be my sponsor. When I looked at the food plan, I said, I will starve to death on this food plan. And all she said was that when she was given the food plan, she didn't question it. That's why she gave me the same food plan. I didn't have a nutritionist to go to or anything like that. And not questioning it is really what it's about being a sponsee. You don't question it. You just do what they tell you because they've got what you want. And so I left Whole Foods at 4:30, and I've been abstinent ever since. So if people are struck abstinent, it happened to me, and they weren't lying at all. It can happen. And I just cannot tell you enough I mean, I was convinced every day after work that someone else was driving my car into the grocery store parking lot to get binge foods. And it just felt like something took over me, and it did. It was the obsession of the mind. And God just, he gave me a reprieve as I was walking out that door. Can't explain what happened. I didn't do anything. People will say, "What did you do? What did you do?" And I didn't do anything. I often bemoaned after that that it took so long for me to get to the point of surrender, but God used every day of those 10 years to get me to that point.
Five more minutes, Claudine.
Thank you. I couldn't have surrendered a moment sooner because I was holding so tightly to my own will. I was my own God. All God required of me was desperation, surrender, and he grabbed me the moment I leaned into him. I mean, just to lean in that little bit in 30 minutes at Whole Foods, and he just grabbed me. All those years of self-reliance was God bringing me to that point. There was no other way but to completely break me. Some people have a high bottom, some people have a low bottom, some have middle. And it just, that's just the way it happens. He's preparing us. My friend got a sponsor too. There's a lot more to her story as well. But what we both know is that God, he was coming after us at a dead run. It wasn't like he was just, that it was gentle and smooth. It felt like he just snatched us up. It gives me chills still today because, I always pictured him turned around. All I could see was his back because I was just in so much trouble for choosing myself over him, but he's running towards us all the time, all the time. Our conversations no longer consisted of complaining and judging the state of the world and everyone we knew in it. I mean, we would get on the phone and just annihilate people and talk about how bad the people were in our lives and how hard it was to grow up and all these things. And now, when we talk on the phone, it is, I would say, 97% of the time, it's to say, "You are not going to believe what God did today. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe what I read. You're not going to believe who he put me in touch with. You're not going to believe what my son said or what my daughter said, or, I'm still dealing with this defect, and here's how God is changing me. Here's where I saw that he's meeting me in it." I mean, it's such a radical shift that it's like we're two different people because we are two different people. He has changed us that much. And when we still complain, I mean, we do. Our defects still come out, but what is different with that is we land on God every time. What is our part in it, and where do we land? Because that's the most important thing. I've witnessed that God's plan for me was strategic, detailed, layered, and intentional, and he's not done. I'm still spiritually sick, but I could see clearly where he is growing me. He sees me, he hears me, and he loves me. Today, I believe that he has never been mad at me, not because I've never done anything to make him mad, but because that's not his character. I am and always have been precious to him. I can look back at the most horrific parts of my life, and I see him there where I never could. I still have times when there is crazy chatter in my head, but God has brought me to a place where I almost immediately stop and ask myself whose voice I'm hearing. Anything I'm not hearing that is in al I'm hearing that isn't aligned with the character of God is not his voice. He's gentle and showers me with compassion, patience, grace, and mercy that I don't even know about. I can see some of it, but it's still all over the place, and I don't see it because it's just there. Today, I trust him even if I'm scared and filled with doubt. I know it's okay to have those feelings. I don't work my program perfectly because I'm not perfect. One of the tools I previously refused to use was weighing and measuring my food. Today, weighing and measuring my food saves me, and I feel uncomfortable when I can't. They are the guardrails on my bridge. Outreach is my lifeline. I never dreamed God would bless me with such rich friendships. God uses steps 10 and 11, I know what they are now, to show what still needs healing in my heart. He gently shows me where I'm not following him and I get to surrender again. These tools reaffirm that he loves me and that he's faithful and patient to change me. I get to be a sponsor and share what God has given me. I get to see their spiritual transformation and God's power in their lives. Lastly, he removes 70 pounds from my body in this process, which it just blows me away. I know now that he is never doing nothing in my life and he never abandoned me. I don't have to work for his love and care. And what I would say is, if anybody feels like I did, he is absolutely waiting for you. He hasn't turned his back. He hasn't abandoned you. He hasn't forgotten you. And just lean in a little bit if you haven't, because he'll grab you. So that's all I have to share.
Thank you so much, Claudine, for sharing your story and your service and your perfectly timed share. So the floor is open now. Would anybody like?